Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
The big story this week to lead off the show, I'm sick, and Doc will only give me a Z-Pack. Oh, well, I guess it happens. But, you know, I'm a quieter, too, so there's that. Mike Riley, I have two big news takeaways from the week before we talk about WWE Money in the Bank on Sunday.
And, well, I got bigger news. I got bigger news.
You have bigger news? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm healthy as a horse, so continue.
That's good.
Because you know why? Because I take my vitamins and say my prayers, brother.
Well, all I get is Z-Packs and antibiotics, and all I do is crap for days, so there's that.
Oh, TMI. Go ahead.
If you watch SmackDown on Friday night, you'll see me poop my pants in the ring.
All right.
So two big news stories for me from the week. We'll do our Money in the Bank preview, and we'll really focus on a handful of matches for that show, and I'll give you some thoughts on Dominion, and I will tell you how I think the WWE can learn from how New Japan presents their big shows. So my big story to lead off the show, this note from Meltzer in the Wrestling Observer newsletter jumped at me, and it was buried in the newsletter, and to me, this is the lead story in wrestling right now.
What do you got?
Quote, for those wondering, Bryan's contract will expire on 9/1, and at this point, he hasn't signed a new deal. Unquote. Me, that's referencing Daniel Bryan, and this is a sneaky big story. I've done a quick survey of my friends and big matches that they are anticipating, and they either have Brock Lesnar, Jinder Mahal, or Daniel Bryan attached to them. And Daniel Bryan strikes me as somebody who's smart with his money, with his in-ring, and seems to me that he's more about the art of pro wrestling rather than the sports entertainment aspect of pro wrestling. So the fact that he doesn't have a new contract with WWE yet is a story to me, and I think it's a big story. And I tend to wonder, because this is where my mind goes, does this mean that Bryan is going to be all in? In other words, it's midnight Eastern time, and his contract has expired. That's 11 p.m. Chicago time. So can Daniel Bryan hit the ring and fight Cody or Kenny Omega or Okada? I don't know. I think it's a sneaky big story. I actually think it's the number one story in wrestling is that Daniel Bryan is a featured player in WWE and he doesn't have a contract extension yet. So is it a matter of they're going to throw Bryan in a bunch of dream matches before he says goodbye?
It's definitely not a dream match when you're with Big Cass. That's like a nightmare and a half. Am I wrong? Like, come on. Those two do not match up well together. That's awful.
See, the thing is, Big Cass is a good performer. It's not my favorite matchup on the show. When you've got Samoa Joe and AJ Styles and so many more in-ring competitors who can do so much more than Bryan can, and you have Cass and Bryan and the height differential and the weight differential and all that stuff, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and it's frustrating. And bigger picture, and maybe this is why this isn't a big story, but Bryan leaving WWE doesn't impact the machine that is the WWE. They have two new TV deals and tons of cash. They'll be fine without Daniel Bryan. And, you know, if Daniel Bryan leaves, hopefully he'll just be a safe worker wherever he ends up, whatever promotion it is.
Right. Right. And you know, it seems like, Jimmy, reading from this a little bit, reading into it a little bit, I think Daniel Bryan holds the cards in this one. And like you're saying, WWE will be fine with or without him. Would it be more beneficial to have him? Absolutely. But I think in the end, he's going to make the call here that I'm coming back, or I just definitely want to go and make money on the independent circuit, similar to what Cody Rhodes has done, and follow that lead there, because he can definitely do that. He's a brand name. He can market himself very well. It's whether Daniel Bryan wants to go back to WWE or not. And that's where I see him at Midnight expiring. And then you see him at All In Chicago that first weekend of September.
So you think he's going to show up at 11 o'clock Chicago time and work All In?
Absolutely.
That's great.
Sign me up. Sign me up, baby. I mean, how it's perfect with Cody and the Young Bucks. That's a great card. And Jimmy, I think you know this. There was talk that they were looking at Lowell, Massachusetts to have it here, right? You knew that, right?
It was not Lowell, Massachusetts. It was it was either there's an arena in New Hampshire that's 10,000 people.
Oh, Manchester?
Yeah, I can't think of what it was.
Okay, all right.
I can't think of what it is, but they're looking for a 10,000 seat building. The talk is that if they do All In 2, they're going to do it at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, wow. Holy cow.
Yeah.
And
that's the rumors right now, is that it's going to be Madison Square Garden,
MSG?
All In, and yeah, All In 2 if they get there, because it's going to be a shot right across, because WWE only runs a handful of house shows at MSG now. So,
Right. Wow. That would be something else. That would be really something else. Well, see how the first one goes and then go from there. But, yep, not CM Punk. Excuse me. Daniel Bryan will be in Chicago September 1. I think that's a good segue, though, Jimmy, on something else, though, right?
The second big story of the week. It looks like CM Punk is done with professional wrestling altogether. Mm-hmm. I'll attempt to read from Meltzer over the weekend.
Yep.
Quote, after saying Wednesday that he didn't think he'd be open to an offer to return to the ring, Punk clarified his position during UFC 225 Media Day in Chicago. Quote, I'm done. I'm done. I'm done with professional wrestling. A lot of people like to be mad at me about that and make fun of me because I lost my first fight. And it's like, that's fine. You're entitled to your opinion. But you do not own me. And I'm entitled to do what I want to do. And that's what I'm doing. Wrestling is in the rearview mirror. I've been trying for 5 years to put wrestling in the rearview mirror, and some people, they won't let it go. They, I don't know, want to live my life for me. I kind of don't understand that, but it doesn't matter what I say. I've said no, 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 no so many times that people just always kind of be like, oh, so there's a chance, unquote. And that's what Punk told TSN in Canada during UFC Media Day. Me, the CM Punk fan? I think he's talking to me, because as I've kind of stated before, yep. I kind of envision CM Punk having one more match, and I hate the fact that potentially his last wrestling match is the Royal Rumble, where he got concussed and then he walked out the next night.
Right.
So that to me is disappointing.
But fired on his wedding day.
But it feels like he's also done with UFC after Saturday night. But he also kind of makes mention that nobody's given him a real offer. So maybe if somebody gives him a real offer, he'll consider wrestling. But something that my friend brought up to me, who's a licensed therapist, he said CM Punk could be emotionally scarred from pro wrestling, and that's why he wants nothing to do with it.
Hmm. Okay, I could see that. However, though, when you have a lot of money thrown at you there, and if you do get an offer, that's a tough one to turn down. Like the Godfather used to say, I'm going to make an offer to you that you can't refuse, right? Or like the Godfather once said, I should say. So that ties back into the whole Daniel Bryan conversation here, Jimmy, with the fact of September 1. Where is it again? Where is it?
Chicago.
Yep, and it just makes perfect sense to maybe have an appearance from CM Punk, whether it be performing in the ring or on the microphone. I could totally see that happen. I put the money on it now. I would definitely bet the house that Punk will make an appearance one way or another in the ring, performing in the ring on the microphone or in the crowd. He'll be there.
I'm convinced that CM Punk will not be all in.
Like in the ring performing, or do you think he'll be there as a fan?
I think he's 50-50 to do his autograph signing, and I definitely don't think he's going to show up in the Sears Center in that building.
Okay.
That's just how I feel.
I got him there in the crowd as a spectator, like in a suite or something.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
We'll see.
You think he's just cashed out from your therapist?
Yeah. I think he's over pro wrestling, and you know what he says, how that trial went. I think he just wants to put professional wrestling behind him.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
He's always struck me as kind of a different kind of cat and not one of these Terry Funk retired, 70 times.
Yeah.
And, is still probably, if you offer him enough money, he'll come back and work a show for you. Punk doesn't strike me as that type of cat.
Yeah. And, he has credited himself being the straight edge guy. So, that honesty factor there too, just a man of his word. I don't know. I got a feeling he'll be there in Chicago if the money's thrown at him. And, I don't think performing in the ring, but definitely that might be his actual last hurrah in his hometown. And that's a tough one to turn down.
I think the next time you see CM Punk will be at Chicago Comic Con next year.
Wow.
That's
no kidding.
I think.
How about WrestleCon at in New York?
I doubt it. Because
he just won't do it.
I think he did his autograph signing during WrestleMania weekend this year.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So,
yeah, so that'll be it.
And it'll be Chicago. So,
I'm going to put him in there. I'll say he'll be in the crowd or definitely in the ring making some sort of an appearance.
Well, I hope you're right, Mike. I hope you're right, but it doesn't look like it trends that way.
Well, you know what? I got to tell you this, Jimmy. You know that he was the longest reigning world champion in the modern era, right? You do know that.
Up until today when Brock Lesnar is at 435 days as the WWE Universal Champion.
Exactly. Now, to give credit to CM Punk, he defended it 141 times. That includes house shows, Raw, SmackDown, only 12 times on pay-per-view. And Brock Lesnar, how many times has he defended it?
10?
10, exactly. That's an embarrassment. They have legitimately made Brock Lesnar out to be a paper toy, champion. Someone that just a figure. That's all it is. And going on my argument last week, it just that title needs to be defended every week. And I don't know about you, Jimmy, but for Brock Lesnar's legacy now, not defending it month in, month out, week in, week out, like CM Punk did, it just lowers that. I don't know. I looked at him like he was, a great competitor before, but now it just lowers it big time for me. It just really does not put him up there on the same pedestal as some of the other greats.
You realize that he's the biggest money draw in the company, that he's the highest paid wrestler they have.
I get it. I understand that. But I'm sorry. That title needs to be defended each week, or each month, rather.
Do you think that Brock Lesnar defending the title or being on Raw every week really affects how the ratings are going to be week to week?
Maybe for Raw right now, because the product sucks.
Is that an indictment on Brock Lesnar, or is that an indictment on creative?
Creative. And they got to figure out a way to get the belt off him so you can have someone each week to defend the title or, have it up for grabs. Who are we going after each week here on Raw for the top dog to be the champion? Who is it? No one, because Brock Lesnar ain't there. You should have that top guy there each week that you should be striving to go for the gold for each week, and he's not there, and that's a joke.
Sounds like a familiar take.
There you go.
Something that will have stakes is Money in the Bank on this coming Sunday. It emanates from Chicago. Right now, it's an 11-match show, two briefcase matches, Styles versus Nakamura for the WWE Championship, Last Man Standing, Nia Jax versus Ronda Rousey, Rollins versus Elias for the Intercontinental, Carmella versus Asuka for the women's title, Sami Zayn versus Lashley, Daniel Bryan versus Cash. The Raw Tag Team titles will be defended. Harper and Rowan's against Anderson and Gallows for the SmackDown titles. And Chicago might be the best U.S. market crowd for reactions, and it feels like a lot of the matches on the show aren't going to go over big, right? The men's briefcase will be good. The women's match could go either way. Nia and Ronda certainly have question marks, as does Carmella and Asuka, and then everybody else kind of fills it out. It should be a great pay-per-view, but.
Yes.
I was looking forward to Backlash, and how'd that work out for me? Not well.
Disaster.
But on paper, this should be a pay-per-view level of WrestleMania with a crowd that's going to support the good and the bad. Support the good and dump all over the bad.
Mm-hmm.
But for our purposes here, I don't want to go through 11 matches because it just doesn't interest me. I want to focus on four matches specifically and add a shout out to a good brother, Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows. Win those SmackDown tag team titles, bring them home, and let's celebrate at Kowloon sometime.
Nice.
But I want to start with Nia Jax versus Ronda Rousey for the Raw Women's Championship. Since they announced this match, I felt like we're going to get non-finish, with the logic being that Nia is going to align with Stephanie McMahon, and it's going to build towards a match of Stephanie versus Ronda. Also, that it's too soon to put the women's championship on Ronda Rousey. Right. Now, today, as we record this, I think Ronda's winning the women's championship on Sunday.
Okay.
Here's why.
Okay.
Saturday night, UFC announced that Ronda was going into their Hall of Fame on July 5th in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Ronda Rousey walking into that Hall of Fame event as the Raw Women's Championship, as the Raw Women's Champion, seems like a perfect cross-promotional opportunity for the WWE and UFC.
Totally. And she'll have a prop around her waist.
Add in the fact Ric Flair made a comment over the weekend saying that Ronda had only signed a one-year contract with WWE. Now, if that's true, she's 100% winning the Women's Raw Championship on Sunday. That's my belief, because they would want that title on her to see what kind of support she would get and try and talk her into an extension.
Okay.
And that's how they would do it, I think. If what Ric Flair said is true and she signed a one-year contract with the company, then she's going to win the championship on Sunday, and away we go. And then it's the build towards Ronda and Charlotte. And again, if that's true, she signed a one-year deal. Charlotte Flair is beating Ronda Rousey, which is awesome, which is next level amazing. But Mike, what do you make of all that?
Well, Jimmy, I like your take on that, especially with the Hall of Fame thing for Ronda Rousey to, you know, have that championship belt around her waist there going into Las Vegas when she does go in next month. So that definitely does make sense there. And yes, I am with you that Ronda Rousey will be the champion after Sunday, but it doesn't come with the cost, more or less, for Nia Jax that it's a clean victory. And here's why. That's where I see Natalya interfering on this one, because it was on Raw last week where Natalya got hurt there from Nia Jax unintentionally. And that'll then begin to set up a feud there between those two. Natalya and Nia Jax will come in, interfere, and screw Nia over the loss of the belt there somehow, and puts the new championship on Ronda Rousey. So that's what's going to happen there. I'm with you there with that addendum of Natalya coming in to set up a new feud with Nia Jax. There you go.
So I think that you're going to see, when Ronda wins the championship on Sunday,
mm-hmm.
they'll do a program with Natty and Ronda.
Yep.
They'll do a program with Stephanie. They'll do a program with the woman who wins the Money in the Bank, which I'll get to momentarily with my prediction of who that is. And probably by that time, you'll start the Royal Rumble program and going forward with the winner, and then you'll get to Charlotte versus Ronda for WrestleMania 35's main event.
Okay, you've been banking on that one since WrestleMania 34 night in New Orleans. You've been talking about that, so ride that hot hand, Jimmy.
I gotta eventually, something will be right for me, so might as well ride it.
Ride it out.
The second match that I'm interested in most is AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura, last man standing match.
Yep.
For the WWE Championship.
Right.
And I have to think this is the last time that we're going to see this matchup on pay-per-view in a big-time singles one-on-one match.
Okay.
I think AJ Styles retains here, and they need to move Nakamura down the card. A Nakamura-Jeff Hardy match interests me. A Nakamura-Daniel Bryan match interests me. AJ Styles just has too many big matches as the WWE champion left in him. and WWE needs to move on from this feud with Nakamura and put AJ in some different matches so we can see how truly phenomenal AJ is.
Yeah, well, he is the
continues to
one.
Be.
Yeah, he is the phenomenal one. And, yeah, you know, how much more can you put these two together? I'm with you there. What's this going to be, three in a row now, right? Because WrestleMania, Backlash, and Money in the Bank.
Don't forget the greatest Royal Rumble.
True. Good point. So four. They've been working together a lot. But who do you like here, though?
AJ Styles to retain.
Okay, see, I go Nakamura. I go Nakamura, takes the belt off him. He becomes the new champion here. And, you know, the fact that they turned him heel, the last man standing situation, and that will turn AJ to a new feud, maybe with Daniel Bryan, maybe with The Miz. He can work with anybody. Maybe with Big Cass, for all we know. I don't know. Anybody. I mean, look at the match you put on with Brock Lesnar last year at the Survivor Series. Nobody thought that was going to be a good one. Nakamura is going to win this one. They've been pushing him for a good year since he came in, and a tremendous move, making him the heel. Nakamura wins. He is your new WWE champion Sunday night, and that is going to pay off there with the last man standing stipulation.
So next up on my list of matches that I care about on Sunday, the women's briefcase match. So it's Amber Moon, Charlotte Flair, Alexa Bliss, Becky Lynch, Natalia, Lana, Naomi, and Sasha Banks. Mike, who do you see winning this one?
I mean, this is the crazy thing, Jimmy, because they've decided to put both rosters in there, and that's where I do wish that it was just one brand on there. You'd have four, but you have two. So it is what it is. So much possibility. God, I almost got talked into Sasha Banks tonight. I don't know why, but I'm sticking with my gut here, and I'm going to go with Becky Lynch winning this one because I think the match that where she had Charlotte lose to her on SmackDown last week, I think that was a foreshadow. If you listen carefully to the commentary, Becky Lynch trying to resurrect her career here. She's trying to get back on top. I think that was the start to what we're going to see here with Becky Lynch. The fact that she can hold on to that briefcase for a full year. I don't think she will. I think she will have it, though, and eventually cash in at some point. Becky Lynch wins the Women's Money in the Bank match, and I think we're in for a good treat on Sunday. Jimmy, I know we talked about this last week here with Bayley. They have legitimately buried her. I'm going to stick with my gut. This is where she officially comes in, and her and Sasha Banks begin that feud to screw Sasha over in the Money in the Bank match. That's another hot take there. Becky Lynch wins. Bayley finally turns on Sasha, and the feud happens. Boom.
So, Mike, who do you think I'm picking to win this match?
Charlotte.
That would be an incorrect answer.
Really?
But it's a good guess.
Okay.
Now, obviously, I'm rooting for Charlotte to win, and I'd love to see her win, but if we're being honest, like real talk here,
yep,
she doesn't need to win the Money in the Bank match.
No, she really doesn't.
So, by that logic that Charlotte doesn't need it, I'm picking Sasha Banks to win this match.
Okay.
She is someone who they've had kind of on the back burner for a little bit. And you give her the case, you give her a prop, she's going to do amazing promos. And they can finally get a way to heat her up and have her cash in or attempt to cash in on whoever the number one, whoever the Raw champion is. Or I still think that they've left this open enough where you could see Sasha try and cash in on SmackDown.
Wow, okay.
But I think Sasha Banks, good promo. You stick her in programs with Alexa Bliss, it's good.
Yep,
you do the Bayley program, that's good. You can do the Ronda program. I mean, Ronda versus Sasha should be a good match.
Totally.
There's just so much that I think Sasha Banks can do with the briefcase. Mm-hmm. And they like to semi-push her. And maybe this is a good, because she holds the record for being in the Women's Royal Rumble the longest.
Right.
So, like, that's a good spot to be. That's a good spot to have, is that record.
Totally.
So now you give her the briefcase and you let her have fun with the briefcase. You let her have a prop and play off the prop. So Sasha Banks is who I'm picking to win the women's Money in the Bank, even though I'm cheering for Charlotte Flair.
All right. Now, do you like my take there, though, with Bayley interfering and then beginning that feud with Sasha, which is well overdue?
I think it's a terrible take.
Well, I think your take sucks, too. Go ahead, Jimmy. What's the next topic?
Fourth and finally, the match that I care about is the men's Money in the Bank match. It's Braun Strowman, Finn Balor, The Miz, Rusev, Bobby Roode, Kevin Owens, Samoa Joe, and a member of New Day.
New Day, yeah.
Which we assume will be Kofi Kingston because he has to do his athletic thing.
But you know what? I think that would be fantastic. And it would be a, if Kofi does win, if he is the guy from the New Day, and if he does win, that would be awesome because that could be the start of individual careers for the New Day. But I think that they're making too much money with the tag team as is. That's a loaded card. That's a good group of talent right there in that men's Money in the Bank match. You got three heavyweight guys, Rusev, Strowman, and Samoa Joe right there. You got the Miz, who is one of the best, you know, like we said, 1-1A on the talent for the current roster right now. I'd put AJ Styles right up there, and Kevin Owens for that matter. Finn Balor, Bobby Roode, that's a really good match, and I'm very excited for that one.
Who are you picking to win, Mike? Give me a prediction. Well, who wins it?
I'll tell you right now, the favorite, I mean, I don't know how he would do in a ladder match, would probably be Braun Strowman. I'm rooting for Finn Balor to begin his redemption for the Universal title, but I'm going to tell you who is going to win because he needs the Money in the Bank, and that is Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode is my pick to win. He needs the briefcase on him to carry with him, Jimmy. This is his next step here to that level. They've pushed him. They're making him that glorious, all that stuff, the robe and everything. He is going to be the Money in the Bank winner of the men's match. There you go.
So that's a good pick because Bobby Roode is certainly a guy who could use the help. He can use all the help that he can get because he has not been good on the main roster. I don't think he's been good on the main roster.
No. Nope,
and it's really an indictment when all signs pointed to him winning the U.S. title at Clash of Champions, Night of Champions, whatever the Boston pay-per-view in December was. And it was Dolph Ziggler who won and then walked on to SmackDown and basically left the title in the ring.
Right.
So that's an indication as to how Vince might feel about Bobby Roode. So Roode could use the briefcase. I think he'd do well with the prop.
Yep, he needs it.
I'd love to see Samoa Joe win. But again,
awesome.
He's a person who I don't think needs the briefcase. No. I'm picking Kevin Owens to win.
Wow, that's a good one.
I think he'd be fabulous with the briefcase. I'm not sure how Kevin Owens can really cash in on Brock Lesnar to win the championship, but that's a problem for them to figure out and me to second guess after it happens and it fails. But maybe what they do is they have him call a shot. Which forces Brock Lesnar to have to show up for a championship match. So, for example, Kevin Owens says, I'm going to face Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. And if Brock Lesnar doesn't show up at SummerSlam, then Brock Lesnar forfeits the championship. That's the only way that I can think that they actually force Brock into that instance if Kevin Owens were to win. Or Raw wrestler were to win. Or Kevin Owens has to go to SmackDown and cash in on AJ Styles or whoever their champion is.
Right, right. So you have two Raw superstars winning the Money in the Bank matches for the men's and women's, huh?
That is true.
So I'm going one of each. Like I said, SmackDown, Becky Lynch for the women's, Bobby Roode for Raw, and that's why I see him. Jimmy, I know you don't have it on your notes for discussion, but I just want to ask you real quick, who do you see winning, Carmella or Asuka?
Carmella retains. Because I just don't see them putting the championship on Asuka yet.
I'm with you there, too.
I have one more Money in the Bank thought, though.
Go ahead.
If the WWE really wants to draw money, Miz wins the briefcase, mm-hmm. Bryan wins the WWE championship from AJ Styles, and then immediately following Bryan's win, the Miz cashes in and defeats Daniel Bryan for the championship. That is what we call a license to print money.
Well, I think that would be perfect because we saw the cash in there. Now, wait, would this be at SummerSlam you're talking about?
This is whenever they want to do it.
Whenever, okay, because it could not be on Sunday.
Well, Brian can't face AJ on Sunday, but yeah. they could have a Raw wrestler win the briefcase.
Mm-hmm.
AJ and Nakamura go on last.
Yep.
And then say Nakamura wins, wrestler who won the briefcase comes down the aisle and cashes in on them, and now they're the WWE champion and they're on SmackDown.
Absolutely. Yeah. So make that jump right there.
Is actually going to be the funniest thing is that the wrestlers who win this match, they won't know about their victory until about 6 o'clock Chicago time.
Of course.
And then they'll change it again, and then they'll have to notify the ref that we've changed the finish again.
Mm-hmm. And maybe the crowd will even impact it too, right?
Well, I more and more I don't believe that to be a true story. I actually got into a fight with somebody over the weekend about this.
Ooh, all right. You'll have to tell me off the air about that one.
Yes, indeed. Mike, what's your favorite Money in the Bank ladder match?
Of all time.
Of all time.
Jimmy, I mean, this pay-per-view has kind of been, you know, it started as a B-level pay-per-view, and yep, it's not one of your traditional...
Money in the Bank was a B-level pay-per-view?
I'd say it started
really?
It started that way.
I don't think so at all, Mike. I think that when they announced that they were doing a pay-per-view with two briefcases for both brands, I think it was automatically an A pay-per-view because the winner of the case got a championship opportunity.
No, I'm not talking about right now. I'm talking about when it initially started 10 years ago, 9 years ago.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When they started doing these pay-per-views, it was one of the most look-forward-to things from me and all the hardcore fans, Mike.
I'm with you, but I think they treated it as a B-level one. This is what I'm saying. They thought it was going to be a B-level one, and now they saw the success of it where it's taken off. And I'm with you, Jimmy. I think it's fantastic. It's one of my favorite ones of the year. I think it's bigger than the Survivor Series.
Absolutely is, and it was when they debuted it.
I agree. I don't think they treated it that way, and now they've realized how big Money in the Bank is and how important it is. If you remember, Money in the Bank started at WrestleMania. There was a Money in the Bank WrestleMania match, and that started like that was a kickoff show, more or less, or the kickoff match. Then the fact that they have an actual pay-per-view for it, that's a big thing. So credit to the performers going out there and taking it to the next level, giving it the respect it deserves. So there's been some good moments over the years, and my favorite match, Money in the Bank match, right here in our backyard. You and I were at the show, Jimmy, 2014 in Boston, when John Cena won the unified heavyweight titles at the TD Garden, June of 2014. That was my favorite Money in the Bank match of all time. Awesome.
So mine was the one in Boston that Seth Rollins won. They told a fabulous story with Seth and Dean hating each other. Dean was taken out of the match, and Kane came out, stopped Dean from winning the briefcase. Then Kane helped Seth win the case. You know, you were talking about Cena winning the championship. Kane had one job that night, and that was to help Seth win the Money in the Bank case and Randy Orton to win the vacated WWE championship. Kane wasn't successful in the latter. It's a bias for me because I was at that show, but I love that match. But just to back up a little bit about your point about the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, this originally started as its singular pay-per-view event in 2010. Kansas City, Missouri was the location. They had two briefcase matches and John Cena challenging for the WWE championship. The next year, Money in the Bank 2011 in Chicago, Illinois, they had two briefcase matches. John Cena versus CM Punk for the WWE Championship was on that show. Money in the Bank 2012, Phoenix, Arizona. These are big arenas. John Cena wins the WWE Championship contract. Dolph Ziggler wins the World Heavyweight Championship contract. The main event on that show, it wasn't the main event, but it was the title fight. One of the title fights was CM Punk versus Daniel Bryan. So ever since this, my point is that early on when they made this a pay-per-view, it was important. They made it important.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying the fact that they made it a pay-per-view was because I think initially the Money in the Bank match itself was looked at as like kind of the up-and-coming guy. If you remember, the first ever Money in the Bank match was at WrestleMania 21. Okay, that was at Mania 21. And then they started doing it at the WrestleManias there. Actually, I take that back. I'm sorry. It was WrestleMania 21. Edge. Sorry, I got to mention this name. Chris Benoit, Jericho, Christian, Kane, and Shelton Benjamin. That was the first ever one at Mania 21. And since then, like you said, it evolved. And to have it become a pay-per-view, I think initially they thought it was going to be B-level. But the fact that with all of the athleticism and the way everyone steps up, it's become a much more important show and something everyone circles on the calendar to stop. It's much more, I'm so much looking forward to this. It's going to be a big rebound from Backlash. I just know it is.
Yeah, and that match in 2005, I believe it opened up the pay-per-view. So it either opened it up or was the second match on the show. But I remember it being really early on that show. That was to emphasize the importance of it, because it was unprecedented that you could win you were legitimately two wins away from a championship. And the only other scenario that could happen is the Royal Rumble match. So I think they put emphasis on this match from the beginning.
Well, it was the third match because the first one at 21 was Booker T in a he beat Chris Master in a 30-man battle royal. Then you had Rey Mysterio against Eddie Guerrero, and then the Money in the Bank match was the third one.
Okay, but anytime that they put a championship opportunity on a WrestleMania, that's a big deal, Mike.
I agree. I'm not saying it isn't, but I'm just saying I think initially when they started the damn thing, they thought it was going to be secondary, like a regular monthly pay-per-view, not one of your big four where they originally started. Now it's a big deal. So a credit to the performers who have made it to what it is today.
Okay.
Are you too tired now, or you feel more sick?
No, my voice is killing me. You just put me in a fit of rage.
All good.
Mike, do you have a favorite cash in?
Oh yeah, Jimmy. I think you know where I'm going on this one. WrestleMania 31, San Francisco. Right after Roman Reigns beat Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins comes out of nowhere. Music hits, briefcase him, boom. New champion, just like that. Hell of a way to wrap up WrestleMania. What's yours?
So I have a handful. That's in the conversation. Rob Van Dam calling a shot against John Cena at ECW One Night Stand. Mm-hmm. Van Dam won a very important match at WrestleMania and called a shot and said that it was going to be ECW One Night Stand. His home crowd against John Cena. The Dolph Ziggler cash in after WrestleMania 29 against Alberto Del Rio. I know that was on your list. One of the things that stood out to me in that cash-in was the pop when Dolph's music hit, and when he was walking down that aisle, him, AJ Lee, and Big E, they were all business.
Oh, yeah.
They were here to cash in, win the world championship, and they did that, and they executed it, and the crowd, I believe it was New Jersey, went nuts for it, from music entrance to him winning the championship. Fabulous moment. Fabulous cash in.
Huge pop. Huge pop.
And really my third on the list is CM Punk cashing in on Jeff Hardy.
Oh, yeah.
One is my CM Punk bias. I admit that. But for those who don't remember, Jeff Hardy was the world champion, and he just won a ladder match for the World Heavyweight Championship against Edge. So Jim Ross is getting in the ring to talk to Jeff Hardy about his championship win. CM Punk's music hits, comes out with the briefcase, and makes an official match. CM Punk at the time was a good guy, and it started him on the fast track of being a villain in the WWE. And it started the Straight Edge Society, and his feud with Jeff Hardy was just outstanding work, because Jeff Hardy was so popular with the fans, and Punk was in this, like, the hardcore fans like him, but he's not over with the mainstream fans, so they swing him to the villain side, and I had seen Punk's work as a villain in Ring of Honor and some other independents, and I knew he'd be a top-notch villain when he got the opportunity. Well, right. This was his opportunity, and he made it count.
Yep, yep. And then that was another great moment, big moment there. One other one, a sneaky one, 2 years ago in Las Vegas, his hometown, Dean Ambrose cashing in on Seth Rollins after the main event there. And Jimmy, you actually spoke to Dean Ambrose the day after, right?
I did, and there's a little backstory that I'm not sure I've told publicly before. WWE reached out to me on the Friday before the show and asked me if I wanted to talk to Dean Ambrose on the Monday after the show. And, of course, I said yes, and I did the interview, and it was a fabulous 10-minute conversation with Dean. But once they reached out to me, I thought, well, Dean's at least winning the case on Sunday, and I bet he cashes in and wins the championship.
Yeah.
And it turned out that he did. You know, Mike, one of the answers that you should have done, and I'm kind of disappointed that you didn't have this.
Which one?
Carmella cashing in on Charlotte Flair.
Oh, that was a good one.
That should have been your favorite, but I understand why it isn't.
It's up there. I know you're not feeling good, so I didn't want to hurt your feelings anymore.
No, it's fine. I just yelled at you for 5 minutes. You should dump all over me. Yeah. Shout out and a big thank you to the WWE Network for putting all of the Money in the Bank matches in their collection package. It made life easy for me, so I could watch a Money in the Bank match and then watch the cash in the same video. So it helped with my research, and it helped rejog my memory on this stuff. So
the network does some really phenomenal stuff, archiving everything. It's awesome.
Absolutely, and they've got good timing on when to put things with where and give dates, and it's just WWE Network is fabulous.
Yep.
Mike, can I have 90 seconds on Dominion and New Japan Wrestling?
Take as much time as you want.
All right. I don't want to bore the audience, because I think most people are here for WWE stuff, but I do want to tell you guys about Dominion New Japan's pay-per-view. It's similar to what WWE would do for Royal Rumble or SummerSlam. It's really their second biggest show of the year. So Meltzer wrote in his Observer Daily Update, quote, "At the very least, this is on the short list of greatest matches I've ever seen," referring to Omega versus Okada. "I don't know how they did it. They were in a situation where anything less than an all-time classic would have been a disappointment, and they absolutely delivered." Right. My opinion, I love this match of Omega versus Okada 4. It was 2 out of 3 falls. Kenny Omega became the new IWGP heavyweight champion. He beat Okada 2 falls to 1. He won the last 2 falls. Greatest match I've ever seen. It's probably in the conversation. Wow. But it all depends on my emotional investment, if I was in the building, things like that.
Sure.
If you ask me today, CM Punk versus John Cena, Money in the Bank in Chicago, might be my favorite match of all time. Tomorrow it might be Triple H versus Undertaker from WrestleMania in Miami. Yep. The next day it might be Mick Foley versus Shawn Michaels at Mind Games 1996. I definitely think that this Okada Omega match is in the conversation, and it's in the conversation with the 3 previous matches that they've had, because they've all been fabulous. One of the things that I noticed was how much the announcers, Kevin Kelly and Don Callis, helped this match. Don Callis put over how important the first fall was to the match and put emphasis on the fact that Omega had to beat Okada twice in the same night.
Wow,
and to put that into context, Okada had only been pinned twice in the last 700 and something days.
That's crazy.
So after Callis put all this emphasis on the first fall and Kenny Omega lost the first fall, now it's a holy bleep moment where Kenny Omega has to do something that he's done once in 700 days and Okada's only had happen to him twice in 700 days.
Wow.
To me, this series is comparable to the Steamboat Flair trilogy from back in the late 80s. I think it was 89. I didn't live that one live, so I had to backtrack that one. This one, I've had the pleasure of watching 4 of the 4 matches live. And yes, I did wake up at 4:30 in the morning to watch Dominion. from the Young Bucks match on through until I think Dominion ended about 8 a.m. local time, Eastern time.
So you did see it live?
So I did watch it live. It was, wow. My sleep habits were terrible that night. I want to kind of convert the conversation into what I liked that WWE, I think, could emphasize more in their product. Yeah. New Japan is a much more believable product right now.
Totally.
Me personally, I treat my favorite wrestlers as my sports teams. Mm-hmm. I think WWE treats superstars as entertainers, yep. And there's a definite difference, especially when you're talking about emotional investment. The second thing is the announcers are more focused on the talent in the ring and not what's trending on Twitter.
Oh yeah, totally. They're so traditional. They're not. Yeah, I think that's important. Very important.
And third and finally.
Because that's part of it. That's the show. Yeah. That is a show. Sorry.
Right. And third and finally, with these New Japan matches, there's no rush. Mm-hmm. The wrestlers are really allowed to sell and let the fans become more emotionally invested in the wrestlers.
Right.
And the WWE has moments where they can do this. They just choose not to.
Right.
Their gauntlet match from a few months ago proves that they can do long matches and draw ratings and get fans emotionally invested in wrestlers. I think that match was a huge launching pad for what Seth Rollins is right now on Raw.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be noted. So there's my probably 90 seconds on
Dominion. You are New fine,
Japan.
Jimmy. I think that's a good take. And I love the fact how you do talk about the fact that they're traditional announcers and what WWE should be doing. Take a page out of their book, make it a better product. And if they want to really showcase Raw as their quote-unquote flagship show, take a page out of New Japan and all the good work that they do there, especially from what you saw at Old Dominion.
And the other thing...
Excuse me, not Old Dominion.
Of course, Old Dominion is a college locally in the lower 48.
It's also a country group, too. So there you go.
Dominion, of course, the New Japan pay-per-view from Saturday.
Yeah, not so much to say. Good Lord.
Lowball 2.
Yep, one of those days, Jimmy.
Yeah, I know. One other note from that show. Chris Jericho won his 10th Intercontinental Championship. It
Look
is his first IWGP Intercontinental Champion.
Wow, okay.
So Chris Jericho made a little bit of history while over there. The thing about Chris Jericho, New Japan Chris Jericho is awesome. He's showing up in different forums, and he gives no... I almost said a bad word there. He doesn't care about anything else, and he curses, and it's fabulous stuff.
He's still got it too.
And if he's working this style and a handful of matches a year, like he can go for as long as he wants. He still looks like he's in great shape for 47.
Totally, and you know it's a credit to his work ethic and you know his everything he does. He's good all around. He'll be a Hall of Famer, Jimmy.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and realistically, he's in the conversation for one of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
I'd put him up there, top 10.
Probably top 5 in my book. No,
wow.
I don't know. I'd have to think about it.
Maybe top 20. Maybe top. That might be a stretch, but he's up there. He's definitely in that category.
One plug, if you'll allow me, before we sign off.
Yeah, go ahead.
Evolve Wrestling is coming to Melrose, Massachusetts, June 24th. They just announced NXT's Adam Cole for that show.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to see Adam Cole live, Melrose, Massachusetts, it's Sunday, June 24th. Bell time is at 7 p.m. It's the Melrose Memorial Hall. It's 590 Main Street, Melrose, Mass. 877-435-9849 or www.wwnlive.com. That's wwnlive.com. Put it all in the command line there, and that'll help point you in the right directions for tickets to Evolve Wrestling in Melrose on June 24th.
And Jimmy, don't forget the New England All-Star Wrestling this Saturday at Starland in Hanover. We plugged that last week, but that's Saturday, June 16th. Go see our boy Ilya. He'll be there. Going to be a good show down in Hanover. That's Saturday afternoon, June 16th. We'll tweet that out on our Twitter handle, at WrestleCast985.
And I believe if memory serves, that show is from 2 to 7.
Yes.
2 to 7.
Yep, going going to be a beautiful day of Saturday. So there you go. Great day to be outdoors.
So for Mike Riley at Sarge985.
Blue check mark.
I am James Stewart. That's Twitter at I am James Stewart. And
Jimmy, the plan is post Money in the Bank show.
Yep. We'll be on. When Money in the Bank goes off the air, we'll record a podcast and it'll be up to you guys as soon as we're done and I'm done editing and making myself sound as good as possible.
And it will be all good, baby.
And just remember, a friend in need is a pest. Bye.